Front Range Outdoors is brought to you in part by Wild Montana's Island Range Chapter, uniting and mobilizing communities to keep Montana wild. Learn more at wildmontana.org/IRC. Also, Front Range Outdoors is sponsored by Great Falls Area State Parks, including Giant Springs, Tower Rock, First People's Buffalo Jump, and Sluice Boxes, providing year-round cultural, historical, and recreational experiences for the Great Falls area.
Back in the saddle again.
Good afternoon. This is Marty Bannon with my co-host Amy Grisak on Front Range Outdoors. On 89.9 Montana Public Radio, and we're also on the World Wide Web, and you can download these podcasts on the website if you miss it live. And today we have a special guest, but before we get there, Amy's had a couple articles published that I thought were quite interesting, and I thought you could just review them shortly about where they can actually read them and what publications and what they're about.
Well, I think you're talking about the ones Outdoor by Four magazine. Since I write 3-4 articles a week, it's hard to keep up. But I think the ones, so Outdoor by Four magazine is kind of a four-wheel drive overlander, really more overlander type publication. And so they had me write one on renting fire lookouts, which is in issue 44. And these you can all find on their website, which is outdoorby4.com. And then most recently, there's one on the American Prairie in the current issue, issue number 45, which was a lot of fun because we went up, I think it was June, to Antelope Creek. And it was when Carly and Faye were coming through, and they had stayed there just a couple of days before, and everybody knew them and loved them and everything. And so we were up then and checking it out, and then got to write an article on it.
So how do the people that missed it when it came out, how do they find it again?
I think it's Outdoor by Four, so it's that X4 times, or by outdoorby4.com. And they have everything on their website.
Okay, and one of your friends also texted me just recently and said there's a program coming up on Two Medicine, and weren't you just hiking in Two Medicine a week ago or so?
Yes, they had their big annual shindig here last weekend, which was, I think, September 24th. And then on September 25th, on that Sunday, they had numerous hikes going out. And so I went with a group to the Hall Creek drill site, or we went close to the drill site. But it was just, you know, as everybody knows, this September, this fall has been gorgeous for the most part. You know, so the color was just coming on, perfect day, really nice group of people. And it was really neat to see some of that country.
Well, segue to on the October 25th at the Dark Horse at 6 p.m. There's a presentation on the Badger 2 medicine, and it's from... If you don't know where it is, isn't that the area between Glacier and the Blackfoot Indian Reservation?
You're right. It's just on the east side, basically, of Highway 2. And when you look at a map, it's really that heart of the country. I mean, when you're in the Badger 2 Med on so many of the areas, you're looking right into Glacier National Park. And then, of course, as you're heading more east, it's always also the Bob Marshall wraps around, you know, those other wilderness areas wrap around it. So it's kind of the heart of this country and also the heart of the Blackfeet people.
So if you want to learn more about it, you can either contact Amy directly, and I'll give you her cell phone. Just kidding. Or on the 25th of October at the Dark Horse at 6 p.m., the executive director of the Glacier 2 Medicine Alliance will be there to talk about the history and where we're at with it and what's going on with it. And I'd highly recommend, if you've got a free evening, the Dark Horse is always fun, but this is a great subject. And with that, we're going to roll into this special interview. I'd just like to say, I don't understand why it took us 5 years to get this person on on our show. Since I drive by his house 3 times a day, and I know we've tried in the past, so it is a big day. So
excellent. Well, yes, we're happy to have Mark Himmel on, and he is the president, current president of the Charlie Russell chapter of the Backcountry Horsemen of America, plus on the national level, he's the national director that's representing Montana, and also the vice chair on that national board. So thank you so much, Mark. As people who utilize the trails, we really, really appreciate everything the Backcountry Horsemen do.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, Mark, how about for the uninitiated? I don't think there's too many of our listeners that don't know what you guys do and what you and how they benefit on the trails. But how about giving us a little genesis of how it got started and how the Montana chapter is one of the key chapters and your place and all that. Just, you know, go back to square one and give us a brief overview.
Ooh, well, as it is, we're coming up on our 50th anniversary next April, and how the Backcountry Horsemen became to be formed was when a group of horsemen up in the Flathead Valley became concerned of the Forest Service. Through one reason or the other, they were, you know, for what I say, walking away from their skill sets. They were not using horses as much as they used to. And it came down to a bridge that needed replaced at the time, and they were going to just take it out, other than they had no way of packing the bridge in. A year later, the Backcountry Horsemen were formed, in 73. And we are a service organization. We work for land managers, being Forest Service, Park Service, state parks, BLM, and in anyone county level, depending upon what part of the country you're in. And from there it has grown. Basically, we clear trail, or we open trail, I should say anymore. And we open trail for, we just open a trail. We don't know how the trail is used all the time, unless it's in wilderness. Then it requires different tools. But for the most part, I work in multiple use areas, and that's what I do during the week. I clear trail most of the time. So where we're at today, you know, what started out as one chapter and 200 people has grown to 13,000 members nationwide, and like one chapter in Montana. Now we're 212 chapters in 31 states.
Wow. And now, how many?
Much from coast to coast.
How many chapters do we have within Montana?
There are 17 chapters in Montana right now.
Wow. So that's a lot of work being done by a lot of volunteers.
Yes, there is. There's probably just under 1,000 members, and we're out there all summer long, clearing trail in our own backyards. We pretty much stick to our own backyard, you know, where we're at. We work closely with the Forest Service. We keep in good communication with other user groups that are out there clearing trail also, like NOVAC or Motorized or Motorcyclists, knowing where they're clearing, so we don't overlap, and we make the best use of all our volunteers. So,
Mark, taking that down one step, the Russell Country chapter here, based in Great Falls. Where do you spend most of your time, and how does somebody nominate a trail? I mean, how do you, from members that are out using those trails, nominate a trail that needs work, and then you guys set up a program to be out there on a weekend or whatever? How's that all work?
For the most part, the Forest Service will approach us. Most of our members may know of a trail, but it has to be a system trail, not a trail that somebody creates on their own cutting across country or something like that. They'll come across a system trail, or they'll say, we're having a little shortage of volunteers this year for the Forest Service. They may not have as many trail crew this year, and they'll say, hey, can you clear this trail over here? And then we just get together. For the most part, I'm in the little belts. I know the highwoods we used to clear, but the motorized always did a better job and quicker at than what we were doing. So, okay, you clear here, we'll clear here. And like I say, for the most part, we kind of stick to non-motorized trails and let the motorized guys clear the motorized trails. And that's just all in the trail classification, how it's classified. And we go from the Little Belts over to the Continental Divide, and then up the And then up the divide, up in the Falls Creek, you know, a little ways into Panapampa. Then we're out of time. Really, the summer goes by. We pretty much work from snowfall to snowfall, which won't be too long. You know, the snow will chase us out of the mountains. So.
And we'll cover this again at near the end, but if somebody's interested out there in joining the organization, either at the state level, national level, chapter level, could you give us some contact information here, and we'll go over it again near the end of the program?
Yeah, pretty much. I tell people now the easiest way, you know, we're with Backcountry Horsemen. We're here in Great Falls. We meet the second Tuesday of every month. For the most part, we meet over at FWP at 7 o'clock. But if somebody wants to find out what we're doing, our Facebook page is Charlie Russell Backcountry Horsemen. Is the easiest way to get a hold of us at that nowadays. It's, you know, through Facebook. A person could also go on to the Backcountry Horsemen America website, which is bcha.org, and you scroll down the page and you'll see a map of the U.S. and you just click in your area code and it will show you the nearest chapter to wherever you live at.
That's excellent, because really becoming a member of the Backcountry Horsemen is a great way to connect with others who love the trails, love their horses, and just really like to be outside together. It's a lot of fun.
And it is a lot of fun and a lot of education, because we go through a lot of education before we actually get out there. I mean, there's all sorts of things between first aid, CPR, and anything the Forest Service requires, like chainsawing or crosscut. We go through training for that. There's just a lot, because, you know, once we're out there, we're out there. We're pretty much on our own. You know, the hospital isn't 15 minutes away, so...
Mark, I have to ask you a hard question here, and it's just something I've heard, and I don't know what the truth on the ground is, and that is that the age of horsemen in America, not your members, but the age of people that are willing to own horses because of expense and style of life people are living now, they're mobile, that the age of people that are owning horses, not just owning them, but are using them, riding them, is aging. Is that, do you see that, or is that something that you have outreach to get younger people involved in owning horses and riding it? I don't really see that in Montana, but I was just wondering, is that something that's occurring?
We do see it. We see it nationally too. Younger age groups, pretty much a person that comes up with a horse nowadays owns one because they grew up with a horse and their parents own the horse and they're able to use it. For a person to start into horses, they usually don't start into horses until their 50s, I'm going to say, when they can afford it later in life. Because earlier in life, we have responsibilities with, you know, kids and grazing them and things. And horses are expensive. They're not cheap. Who I work with and work with, well, I say kids groups, 4-H is a great place. I will work, you know, anything 4-H needs or wants to do. Go ahead.
No, that's fantastic. So now with some of the work that you're doing on the trails, obviously tools are going to be different from where you're working. Do you work a bit in the wilderness where it's all, you know, no powered equipment?
Yeah, we do. It's just I actually find more volunteers in the wilderness
really
than I do out in the motorized area. There's something about volunteering your time in the wilderness, because then you meet all the other volunteer groups like Montana Conservation Corps or AmeriCorps, Job Corps, whoever could be working in that area, or any of the other volunteer groups like there's just so many of them. And tool-wise, yes, we're using crosscuts and or axes and smaller saws. Currently, the crosscut saw that I use is, I've dated it, it's 90-some years old, and it still works perfect today. I mean, you can't reproduce tools that were made back then today. So.
Yeah, sometimes with the when you overlay the recent wildfire issue we have across the West and the drought and the climate change and however you want to define that, it seems like Clearing trails gets tougher and tougher every year. The budget cuts on the trail crews, and so volunteers are more important than ever in clearing those trails. I remember, I think I was back there, and actually backcountry horsemen packed us in to work on some trails. And one of them members, an older member, and I say that with some trepidation because I'm very old myself, and he was riding back there. He was packing back there, and he told me how many trails there used to be in the Bob Marshall that they maintained versus what they could afford to, the park or the Park Service or the National Forest could afford to maintain now. And he said they could do none of that if it wasn't for volunteers like the Backcountry Horsemen and then all the other organizations that you mentioned that were willing to provide the human workers. So, you know, with some of those fires, when you have deadfall, man, clearing it with hand tools is tough work.
Tough, dirty work. Plus, it's very hard on your tools. In fact, I won't even use my handsaw on a tree that's blackened. I'll use an axe. it's dirtier, but it dulls your equipment much, much faster. And it's just not that easy to sharpen a saw. I only like to sharpen my saw once a year. So if I've got to go in and I'm going to clear how many miles of trail or cut, I get into a blowdown area where I've got 100 trees to the mile. And granted, a lot of them are smaller tree, lodgepole, but still they're there. It's challenging work that you get into. Besides the weather, beetle kill, really, we're just getting over the beetle kill. We get where that beetle king threw how many years ago, but the trees that the beetle killed are just starting to fall. I've got days where, like up on the Continental Divide, I mean, it took me 8 hours to go a mile, and that's how many trees I was cutting up. I couldn't even bother to count. You know, we only pack a gallon of gasoline with us, so it was rough up there.
Yeah, it's amazing. I just learned recently that within the provisions of the Wilderness Act, there's actually the provision to waive that. And in really great, really extenuating circumstances, they've actually had contractors go in and clear trails with powered equipment because there was no way. It was so overwhelming that if you sent crews in there with hand crews, it would be years to clear mm-hmm. the trail. And I'm glad they have that provision in there. I mean, mm-hmm. When I'm in the wilderness, I don't want to hear power tools, but I also want to hike in there. And as you know, some of those, and you're right, what I've seen is it's not so much the fire as it was the beetle kill. We're trying to get through the beetle kill, and every time we have a windstorm, the beetle kill will just basically shut a trail down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, it does. And the minimum tool analysis that's in the Wilderness Act really gives the districts that I'm going to say power or the decision to use saws. We usually talk about it ahead of time, and sometimes we'll just say, well, we're going to just find more volunteers and get in there and use a saw and get it over and done with. We sort of challenge each other so that we don't have to use the chainsaw. But in some cases you do. I will admit that. I mean, you can clear many more miles in a day with a chainsaw. One person can, and then it takes two to run a cross cut. So it's depending upon how many volunteers you have coming through. Luckily, the Bob Marshall Foundation does a very good job of attracting volunteers throughout the country.
So what were some of your favorite projects this summer? On what trails did you work in that you're very proud of?
This summer, I was in the Little Belt mostly. After I got down the Continental Divide. Actually, the Continental Divide is fun because you get to see your through hikers that are hiking from Canada to Mexico. And for our little part, we were mostly, you know, from Rogers Pass to Fletcher's Pass, clearing that. And, you know, they got to get through. And when they come down a trail and see that it's open, you know, they actually get a sigh of relief knowing that, well, they're on the right trail and that it's going to be a lot easier to go from here on. Because, you know, when you get up and most of them leave from up on Marias Pass and start coming, like you mentioned, Abijah 2 Medicine, coming down through there. I heard a guy tell me he walked for a mile and then never touched the dirt.
Wow.
The crews just hadn't gotten up that far yet. You know, so it's that's a challenging part for me. I get into the little belts because that seems to take a second place to the wilderness. So for the most part, it'll just be me and one other guy and another person during the week. And, you know, we only really clear one day a week, and motorized will be doing what they're doing over on trails. And, you know, we keep in contact, but only to just confirm what we've got accomplished so far. But there's many days I've, 6 hours to go 3/4 of a mile with the one up Hoover Creek. Definitely a challenge.
Well, that's fantastic. That's a great place to work.
Yeah. It's a great place because, you know, when you get 100-degree days,
yeah.
You want to go by some place that's got a lot of stream crossings, and Pilgrim Creek or Hoover Creek in our own little backyard here are ideal. Rarely do I see going up Hoover, really does the temperature get above 90 degrees going up that drainage.
That's, you know, definitely.
So it's always one place I go to hide.
Oh, that's, well, you shouldn't say that on the radio. But no, that's,
well,
great to know.
I put it out there. What I won't say is where I see the elk at.
Oh, that's good. Good, good. Now, of course, being a horse person, I have to ask you about yours. What horses do you have, and how long have you had them?
Well, I've got 5 horses at the moment. My wife loves to drive. Sandy likes to, you know, come home down the day, and we'll hitch up a team and go out on the road and drive. So we have 2 Morgan horses that are purebreds. We drive on the road. I've got, you know, 2 wagons and 2 sleighs, so I keep them busy, and that's mostly what they do. My wife rides a horse, and I have 1 horse that I ride, plus I have a smaller horse that's a Pasofino, and I use that one because my other horse is 16 hands versus a 14 3-hand horse.
Ooh, yeah, I appreciate
you
that.
You know, when you're up and down 60 to 100 times in a day,
yeah.
I like a shorter horse, but a lot of times, you know, I may start a day and then not get on the horse for another mile or two. I'm just leading up the trail, but I do like to ride out. So, you know, I've been around horses early in life and then had to give them up when my family started, but then got back into them. I grew up in southeastern Pennsylvania originally in Amish country. And so when I moved out here, brought my horses with me. Only 2 at the time, but I've quite gone back to other, you know, back there to find horses again that I wanted, or bloodlines, something like that. You know, it's mostly what we grew up with that we, you know, that we're attracted to and we stay with. You know, I had my 1 horse 31 years.
Wow.
He lived with me longer than my kids did.
Yep. So. Yeah. That's right. Like I said, when you and I were talking, I would always remind my husband, I've had Kilo longer than I've had you. So,
yeah, horses, you get to know them. Sometimes it's a lot like raising teenagers,
mm-hmm.
when you're with them, and many a time I've put my life in a horse's hands coming off of a steep mountainside in the dark, when I stayed out too long.
Oh, yeah.
I can't see the trail in front of me, yet the horse just walks right along and takes me to the truck at some point.
Yeah, you're very grateful for the level-headed ones.
Yes, yes.
Well, we're talking here on Front Range Outdoors today with Mark Himmel, a local member of the Backcountry Horsemen, and also on the national level. And you need to mention that Sandy participates in the Backcountry Horsemen also on, I believe she's one of the directors, Mark?
Yes, she is. In fact, she's also the state treasurer right now. So, yeah, you know, we're at 3 levels between chapter, state, and national, and a person can bounce up or bounce down to each level wherever you want to volunteer at. Yeah, and each level does a little bit different things that they're concentrating on. So, as far as, you know, locally we clear trail, watch travel planning. Statewide, they watch the what's going on coming out of the region itself, anything, you know, for regional changes or something like that. And on the national level, I watch for Anything that will come out of Congress, a bill or something that might be anti-horse or anti-access almost for anyone at that level. So.
Now, Mark, on the state level, is there a state convention every year?
Yes, there is. And this year it is in the Flathead Valley in April to celebrate our 50th anniversary.
Excellent. I'm sure that'll have an excellent, you know, everybody coming to celebrate and make plans for the summer.
Yes, you know, big turnaround. I mean, at our 40th, 10 years ago, I was state chairman at the time, and we had a great showing come out. And it's, you know, none of us thought, wow, are we going to be around for our 50th? You know, and well, here we are. And so we're really planning to have a good time, good fun time.
So speaking of that, though, is the membership still strong? And
yeah, it always seems to hover in that area of 60 to 100 people. It's just where it stays at. I mean, when travel plan comes out, members are concerned about losing something, then they band together and to see how they can, because many voices really get noticed, and you can, you know, if you're threatened with something. We've never been threatened with anything here locally.
Okay.
Our service has been really nice, great to work with and partner with. But in other areas, you know, they may get, you know, that they might have been some restrictions or something like that.
Yes. Oh, I was a member when I was over in the Flathead. So, yeah, they could get pretty riled up about some things.
Well, yes. So, yeah, if you try and take something away from somebody, they're going to get riled up.
Oh, yeah.
No matter how you're using the trail or what you're using to ride on, you can get riled up.
Absolutely.
And, Mark, again, you mentioned earlier was the best way to get a hold of you if somebody has their interest piqued in participating in some way, or at least come into a meeting and see what you're all about, it's to go to your Facebook page, correct?
Correct, yeah. Facebook page will put you on, you'll know, because we don't always, during the summertime, we don't like to meet indoors. We like to meet at somebody's house. Like a lot of times we'll meet at my house, or we'll have something educational done, like the vet will come over, and Dr. Manz was over last month, and we went to equine first aid because we pack an extensive first aid kit and how do you use it, or people first aid, you name it. We'll get into packing. We really stretch our person's, anybody that's with us, their skill sets. You know, that's what we're there for. Education, we pass it along.
I always remember the Packers showing the volunteers up in the Bob. I think they were Flathead folks. And they went out of their way to show us with the canvas things how they pack stuff, and they were getting free help also, but it was, to me, it was definitely an art. Then to hear some of the stuff that people had packed in, they had actually packed in, did a lot of work packing in fish to stock, and they also had packed in kayaks so they could float so clients could float the middle fork of the Flathead. Mm-hmm. It was amazing some of the stuff over the years that they had actually packed into the backcountry. It's basically they had never turned anything down. They had figured out a way they could pack it in. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, so there's always, and that skill set that's there, that's the skill set that we're always asking the questions. You get the older packers like Smoke Elser or some of the guys in the Flathead. I mean, they're still around. We can still pick their brain and just sit by the fire and talk. You know, how did you do this or how did you do that? You know, because, you know, you learn two things, one of two ways, the easy way or the hard way. And learning things the hard way on a horse when you're packing something is not something you really want to do.
No, that's...
I mean, it can make your life miserable for that day. So
yeah. A little rodeo on the trail.
Yeah, you could end up with a helicopter ride if it goes badly.
Yes, you could. I mean, it's that's the dangerous part of it, you know. But if you think about it and, you know, rely on technique and practice your technique, yes, but it's quite fun. I've always said it was quite fun the days when I used to pack for the Continental Divide Trail crew, coming across the Continental Divide towards the end of the day with, you know, leading a pack string of 5-pack animals was the most fun I think I've had when I did that job.
Absolutely.
It was really fun at the end of the day.
Well, we are out of time this afternoon, but wanted to thank you once again, Mark. And once again, this is Front Range Outdoors with Marty Bannon and Amy Grisak on KGPR Great Falls. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like more information about KGPR, please visit our website, kgpr.org, where you can find a link to donate, links to all of our other locally produced programming, and information about your local voice, KGPR Great Falls.
The sun's sinking low in the west, and I know another day on the range has gone by. We'll bed down the strays we've been gathering all day with a Montana love.